When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This 10th year of Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Reed Fischler, Larry Bailey, and Michelle Sirju. Coming up on DTNS, Amazon Web Services wants to help you run your own AI models. Windows 11's next gen has some official and unofficial news. And let's talk more about that NVIDIA RTX 4070. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, the 13th of April, 2023, in the home of rock and roll. I'm Rich Straffolino.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Yes, that's right. And Roger, I would even say, why don't we just co-host a show together today? Does that sound like
why not? I think two guys in two shirts in two different parts of the country, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I was going to go shirtless today, but I'm glad we decided to make it a shirt day. So let's get it started with a little something we like to call the quick hits. Google released the first beta for Android 14. This adds a new share sheet where developers can add custom app-specific functions. It supports users applying per-app language settings and supports apps restricting sensitive data visibility for accessibility services. Some interesting features for sure.
Nikkei Asia sources say Apple began talks with suppliers to begin producing MacBooks in Thailand. Suppliers say that these could either complement planned MacBook production in Vietnam or serve as a backup location. Apple reportedly has been producing Apple Watches in Thailand for over a year.
The popular caller identification service Truecaller introduced an update to provide live caller ID on iOS for subscribers. It's not been available for a while, but the feature is still limited when you compare it to the Android version. For example, users must ask Siri to search Truecaller as a call comes in, just won't do it automatically. This will search through a set of numbers of directories that's stored in Apple's call kit framework, and that's determined by a Truecaller spam algorithm, although they do update those directories daily with fresh numbers as relevant.
In other news, Garmin announced the $450 Instinct 2X Solar Smartwatch. Garmin claims in the device's quote, smartwatch mode, it can get an unlimited battery life through solar charging if you wear it 3 hours outside in 50,000 lux conditions. So basically, direct sunlight. So wear some sunscreen. In fitness modes with GPS on, the watch will drain much, much faster, and the watch will also include a multi-LED flashlight as new tracking activity like obstacle courses, sounds like my life, and advanced fitness features.
50,000 lux sounds like you're on the surface of the sun, but this is like, there's no clouds in
here. It just sounds like sun blindness without, or snow blindness without the snow.
And the latest update to Google Maps adds navigation enhancements for national parks, something you might need your solar watch for. The app will now highlight an entire trail route on the map and provide precise directions rather than just providing a start pin for the trail. The app also highlights popular destinations in a park. Maps will also support downloading park maps for offline access.
Which I think is super about time they do, because there's nothing worse than hiking and realizing, hey, my map doesn't work because I ain't got a connection.
Yeah, not exactly great. So let's get in talk about some of the other news of the day. We're going to be talking about Amazon Web Services, obviously the giant in when it comes to cloud infrastructure. Well, they announced some new services targeted at corporate customers. I guess not surprising. It's AWS wanting to run their own generative AI models. This includes things like using custom hardware for instances to more cost effectively run them. Cost is one of the big things with a lot of these models. The cloud provider will make models from some big names available. They're not kind of sticking to one horse here. They have models from Anthropic, Stability AI, AI 21 Labs, as well as Amazon's own Titan model. So you have a lot to choose from and probably going to be adding more over time. According to AWS CEO Adam Selipsky, we believe that customers are going to need a lot of different generative AI models for different purposes. Now, Roger, this announcement very much feels in contrast to what we've been seeing from Microsoft with their Azure OpenAI services, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, this seems more like an agnostic approach than Microsoft's more like, you know, come into the family. Honestly, it actually sounds like the better route, but it might be a little too early to tell. Adam Selipsky is correct that there will be a need to have different generative AI models depending on the workload or the task that you have, right? If you want to generate images, you probably don't need a ChatGPT-like generative chatbot to help you with that. So, you know, it could be one of those things where a client could very well just kind of pick and match what they need for their particular business or production output.
Yeah, and a lot of the generative AI use cases we've seen are kind of unusual sometimes for this kind of stuff, direct to consumer, for lack of a better word, right? Where it's, hey, this is ChatGPT, you can access it right in your browser, or we're going to integrate this into Microsoft Word, which is a user-facing application, if nothing else. And same thing with all these image generation stuff. And while we've seen, like I said, with Azure OpenAI service from Microsoft, we've seen some enterprise moves to this. When you start talking about AWS, this is the boring corporate a kind of rollout for generative AI, where I really feel like this is going to get into the hands of a lot of people in more indirect ways, right? We've talked about some of the applications for this, right? But AWS already has hooks into so much of, you know, the Fortune 500, Fortune 1000, you know, whatever designation you want to have, where these are companies that are huge. They want to be the tech forward. They have like a legitimate technological need, whether it's customer service or any number of different applications where this would come in handy. Yet they lack the ability. I mean, we talked about how OpenAI working with Microsoft, partly because they needed their cloud infrastructure to train all of these data sets. And when you're talking about very specific applications, we're talking about customer service where you can't have, you know, a chatbot turn toxic in that encounter. Having very specific models, having this already in core, probably going to plug into exactly the AWS workflow that all of these organizations have. And, I mean, this seems to me to be the way to spread this like super quick.
And this is the thing. Generative AI right now is the hotness, right? Everybody wants to get on it, and they want to plug it in whether or not it makes sense, right? Oh, I'm Zillow. I'm going to throw in a chatbot so it can tell you how many 2,000 or 2,100 square feet, you know, in your price range is in this city. I mean, there's a lot of things that people are now imagining. Now, of course, none of these are going to last, you know, for any duration, and, you know, as things begin to shake out. But I think we're at the beginning of the land rush, right? Everyone's running and they're screaming into the store, you know, trying to get what they think is going to give them an advantage against their competitor and possibly help them take the leg up on their on their business. Right now, we're seeing a seismic shift in the way a lot of businesses operate. The pandemic, inflation, these are all having impact. Whether it's employees, the way companies do business, to the way you interact with customers, and generative AI seems to be the magic answer that solves all of that. Until it doesn't. So everyone is just going to try to do everything they can. And Amazon actually might be onto something because, hey, we're going to give you a plethora of tools to figure out what you want to do and how you want to do it. And if it doesn't work out, you know, you can scale back. Not on everything, but just the stuff that you don't need.
Yeah, and I feel like this is almost the opposite of kind of Microsoft's play, at least for the moment, because Microsoft right now is betting on they made the right technological bet in this moment with OpenAI, right? So that gives them an advantage because they're early to the leading edge of this technology. Whereas Microsoft is saying, hey, Amazon is saying, hey, we are betting that these are all going to get to a level of very good in a very short period of time. So why not give you models that probably we can price differently also? You know, instead of just paying for ChatGPT or for GPT 3.5 or GPT 4 and paying for that at a specific rate or something like that, Houston, you can use our Titan model. It's not as good. We're telling you it's not as good, but it might be perfect for a very simple customer service chatbot application or something like that. And then if you want to move on to something like Anthropic, we can actually create like different price tiers and kind of create a kind of a competitive marketplace where you can kind of plug and play as your needs are across your business. I think it's a you know, and Microsoft can always adopt this model anyway, but I think it's a fundamental difference in how they're viewing this market.
And I am curious to see how it shakes out. I mean, it is. They aren't widely divergent in their business direction with generative AI, but it is different enough that I think it will be very educational to see what works. Because, you know, as they say, hindsight's 20/20.
All right. Well, we're going to be moving on and talking about some Windows 11 and some gaming. But to do so, I think we're going to have to bring on Patrick Norton. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show today and for joining us for this.
Thank you so much. My apologies for being late. I managed to do something terrible with a pre-AI and darn near pre-computer automobile. I also want to make this joke again. Who knew that the Terminator was going to come, Skynet was going to come via Bing, of all places? Bad AI joke. We got a slate of Windows 11 form factor news today. In official news, Microsoft announced it will bring Windows 11 to its HoloLens 2 headset. Remember HoloLens? It's not dead yet. Proving that Microsoft still remembers it exists. The update won't bring any notable user-facing updates, but offer, in theory, a better app experience because of upgraded performance. Microsoft will also add in some developer-facing updates. The big one is Edge WebView 2, which lets devs embed HTML and JavaScript easily to apps and generally improve web-powered apps. Look for the free optional update in June. So yes. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, for you Windows 10 diehards, you're not going to be forced to upgrade your HoloLens, but it's nice that it's out there. But we also saw some interesting leak news, and this comes from the Twitter account Hoxod, H0X0D. I have to read Twitter handles. It's always awkward. They published a video from a Microsoft-held hackathon back in September, and this demoed a concept. It's pretty interesting. Windows 11 UI optimized for handheld PCs, specifically running on a Steam Deck. Of course, we've seen a lot of Steam Deck-ish Windows PC of late. We talked about the Asus ROG Ally, catchy name as it were there. This particular mock-up shows a launcher and a game shell on the Steam Deck with a Windows UI better optimized for gaming controls and touch. This is from an internal hackathon, though, so let's like put some context here. No indication that Microsoft leadership will further develop this idea. If you actually watch the slide deck, it's kind of charming how like, I don't know. This is a slide deck I would put together. Like, it's not polished, right? It wasn't meant for any kind of press screening or anything like that. But, you know, Patrick, Roger, I'm curious, given the interest in the form factor from hardware makers, I guess, does it make sense for Microsoft to be looking at something like this, Patrick?
You know, with the amount of money Microsoft has, it probably makes sense for them to be looking at everything. I'm also kind of laughing because, unlike our friends at Google, and killedbygoogle.com remains one of my favorite and most heartbreaking websites in the universe, they will actually keep throwing resources at a product until it either succeeds or they've literally given it a solid chance. I'm curious, you know. They're everywhere. There's certainly been some huge successes in that venue, that handheld device area. So, yeah, I'd like to see them develop it. Who knows, though? I mean, at this point, hardware development is such a complicated thing for manufacturers. Or feels that way, maybe.
Honestly, this is kind of what Microsoft has been doing forever. Remember when they used to do phones? Because, hey, what else could live? What else can Windows live on? A phone, or this, or that, or a handheld, Steam Deck like device. I think it makes sense because there's a lot of interest. I mean, Steam Deck has done a lot better, and actually it's done a lot better than I thought it would. And it is the first kind of gaming handheld form factor, where it's a tablet, but you have controllers on the other side that isn't from a company called Nintendo. And I think Microsoft is seeing this is a potential avenue. Maybe it won't pan out, won't hurt.
Well, this is what's interesting to me, because I thought the whole deal with the Satya Mania era of Microsoft is they were getting away from the let's put Windows on everything. And the more I've been thinking about this, the more I wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft came out with this. Obviously, they have the engineering talent to do something like this. But in some ways, I think they would see this as a middle ground that may be going away, in that Microsoft is already investing incredibly heavily into the cloud a gaming sphere, right? And if you're doing that, you kind of don't need necessarily this specialized device, or you can let the bevy of other companies that are making cloud gaming hardware, and then they can just run services on top of that and get a piece of that without having to get their hands dirty with hardware.
And I'll say this for PC gaming: if you want a game on a PC, you aren't running Linux. Sure, if you want to run a handful of Valve games, you run Linux. But if you want to run all the AAA titles, you're going to need to have Windows running on that machine. And it only makes sense if you're going to get 95% of the games playable on that you can download off Steam or Epic Store or whatever, you're going to need to be able to run Windows on it. And so that totally makes sense.
But when you dig into this story, right, you know, there's a hackathon project. They're getting things running on a Steam device. They've got Steam Deck controls working from Windows. They've got a gaming shell customized for Windows. You know, I mean, this certainly seems like an internal effort to create a competitor, in that area.
Or it could be like, hey, Asus or Razer or whomever, you go spend the money to actually make these, and we'll just give you out the reference designs like we do with DirectX. Yeah, Take it and spend the money, and we'll cut a portion from our license from your profits.
I'm just going to say, looking at the videos also for this, the launcher that they put together, admittedly, this is a hackathon. It's a small team working on this. I'm just going to come out and say, this looks a lot like Windows 8. I'm sure Microsoft does not like hearing me say that, but it's very like tile UI looking in its thing. And you know what? It turns out that UI is probably pretty good for like a game controller, right? Because that's not too far off.
The whole problem with the tile UI was that it was really designed for touch screens that nobody really had when Windows 8 launched. So, you know, they're a little too far ahead of the curve on that one. And frankly, if it gives a quality gaming experience, is anybody going to care?
That is the key indeed. Well, we love to hear from all of our supporters. So if you have some time, please fill out our latest survey. Let us know what about DTNS is working for you and, you know, maybe what isn't. Just visit dailytechnewsshow.com/survey to let us know your thoughts. We truly appreciate it.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
All right. The NVIDIA RTX 4070 graphics card. It's available today. Did you mark your calendars? I hope you did. I popped up in my notifications for sure. It's touted as a cheaper alternative to the RTX 4070 Ti, the company released at the beginning of the year. Has a price of $599. So, you know, that may be some scratch to you and me, but it's $200 cheaper than the RTX 4070 Ti. Sounds great, right? Well, maybe not. According to some online reviewers, the value prop for the RTX 4070 isn't all that great. So, Patrick, you've been following all the ins and outs of this story. Can you kind of break down what's going on here? Why the mixed reaction?
Well, the mixed reaction, you know, it's the mixed reaction is essentially, you know, in the post-Bitcoin or in the post-mining era of GPUs, when you can actually buy a GPU without mortgaging your house, the value proposition, I think, has radically changed as we go from generation to generation to generation of GPUs, right? You used to expect some big jumps, some big changes, some radical performance, and things are a little chill. So when we look at the 4070, you know, I started going back and forth with Brad Chakos from over at PC World. And, you know, this is, on one hand, this is an extraordinary piece of technology, right? 5,888 CUDA cores. It's running at 1,920 megahertz, bumps up to almost 2,500 megahertz, 12 gigabytes of GDDR6X RAM. We'll talk more about that in a second. It is a fantastic 1440p card. And it's got DLSS3, so if you're big into ray tracing, you're going to get a bump in ray tracing performance if your game supports it. And, you know, 1440p is the sweet spot for this. It is a nice jump in performance up from the 2070. It's less impressive or less dramatic in terms of performance bump from the 3070. So I almost feel like we have a sort of every other GPU upgrade path that's starting to loom here. When you look at the price, it is, you know, $100 less than a 3080, which is good. You know, MSRP anyhow, right? 3080s are pretty much, at least as of my most recent search, gone from the shelves and the channels. And a lot of 4070 GPUs are actually currently selling for anywhere from 650 to 680. There are several cards I found for selling pretty much at that $600 MSRP. I like, you know, part of the reason I started chatting with Brad Chakos on this was, you know, he's like, you know, TIL $600 is a budget graphics card, which is, you know, a lot of money, period. End of discussion. And my thought was, oh, my goodness, will, you know, NVIDIA's 1080p, you know, sweet spot gaming card be $500, which is just staggering. I used to build $500 gaming PCs, the entire PC, including the GPU, or at least having onboard graphics that would function until you could buy a GPU. And, you know, Chakos' response was like, I deeply hope not. He thinks, and a lot of other people have speculated, that a $400 4060 GPU targeted at 1080p gamers might happen. You know, he also noted that the 4070s did not sell out. In fact, I'm looking at you know, one of my favorite online, you know, sellers here, and I'm pretty sure there are still a ton of 4070 cards available at my local store, which, you know, if you think about a year ago, is kind of ridiculous. A new card came out, it didn't sell out immediately. You know, didn't they restrict availability enough, like a launch of a new console platform? But I'm actually kind of really curious to see where this goes, because, you know, I have a small creature who's been getting into gaming, and it's time to move him onto a dedicated gaming rig. And I really, really don't want to spend more on the GPU than I did for my last three or four general use PCs, which just maybe me not adapting to the times. But it is a dream.
So is the logic here from NVIDIA, the 4070 is your 3080 replacement, but not really? I mean, it seems...
Well, it's a lot of it's about, you know, the challenges. If you're a 4K gamer, or if you plan on upgrading to a 4K monitor in the near future, which, if you look at Steam statistics, is still a tiny percentage of gamers, at least on Steam, you know, the 12 gigabytes of VRAM on this is not going to deliver the experience you want, especially if you're running ray tracing. You know, there has been a lot of cranky, angry online Reddit, forum, Twitter, back and forth about how they you know, this could have been a great 4K card, but they gutted the memory to force you to pay a couple hundred dollars more to get a better gaming experience if you spend more money on 4K. And I think, you know, it's frustrating whether you are a you know, somebody who's deep in, you know, Adobe Premiere or some other application that takes advantage of CUDA cores, or if you're a gamer, you know, so many things here. Like one, 1440p, fantastic card. You know, if you've got the money and you're a 1080p gaming, probably still a fantastic card. If you're a 4K gamer, it's not the card you want to buy. And that people have been really cranky about, because a lot of speculation is they intentionally took the VRAM they needed out of this card to force me as a 4K gamer to spend too much money for a GPU.
Now, given what you just said, though, about, you know, kind of the situation with the supply chain not like being semi-functional at this point, where it doesn't immediately sell out and go for triple the price on eBay, is there a chance that, like, because like last time I built a gaming PC was in the days where like MSRP for GPUs was a little bit of a floating commodity. This may have been even before Bitcoin mining, so it's been a hot minute. But is it that and combined, is there anything AMD is putting out there to directly compete with this right now that would put the price pressure on this?
Absolutely. In fact, and you know, AMD went out of their way to point out that they have several like $500 GPUs with 16 gigabytes of VRAM that are available right now. So there's a huge amount of market competition at this point, and I think probably a little more competition for 4K gaming. I also want to kind of separate supply chain issues and supply chain issues, because, you know, supply chain issues are affecting availability of silicon, of substrate, or have been, right? It's less now. There's still a lot of challenges. You know, we're affecting the availability of parts. A lot of the scarcity on GPUs we saw in the last couple of years was because people who were literally using GPUs to print money, in a metaphorical sense, were buying all the GPUs, and they had spreadsheets that were like, we could spend up to this much on this GPU and still make money off of it if we keep it running for 6 months. So they were buying staggering amounts of GPUs before we, the simple gamers and video editors of the universe, could actually buy a card or buy a card that we could afford. So there's thanks to some changes in the mining universe, that has changed. That level of scarcity, but at this point, I don't think there was a lack of GDDR6X RAM to manufacture a few more, you know, gigs of RAM on these cards.
If someone was wanting to upgrade and they were maybe in a 3060 or lower, like in a 2000 series, would it make sense to just get a 3080? At this point, if it is $100.
If you can, I don't think there. I did a brief search before the show, about an hour before the show, and I could not find a 3080 for sale anything remotely in the neighborhood of a breath of the MSRP. Like, I was looking at stuff that was in the $1,200 to $1,300 range, and if you're going to spend $1,200, buy a 4080. Now, if you have a, you know, source of 3080s that are close to MSRP, that gets kind of interesting. I think at this point, you know, depends on your monitor size, depends on how much gaming you do, depends what your budget is. But I think 3080s have kind of vaporized from the channel. Watch them all, you know, show up at MSRP tomorrow.
just to get your goat there, Patrick, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at, I've checked at least three major sources, and not a single one of them had a 3080 in stock. They had third party sellers that were selling 3080s for like $1,200, but, you know, buying a 3080 for $1,200 when you could buy a 4080 for $1,200 seems kind of silly to me.
All right. Well, the last time I was probably looking to build a Windows gaming PC was probably close to the time that Winamp was close to relevant, but we're talking about it again. Everyone's favorite skeuomorphic media player for Windows. But let's do a brief timeline here of Winamp's demise and resurrection. Remember, back in 1999, AOL acquired Winamp's developer Nullsoft for $80 million. And then in 2013, AOL announced that Winamp was shutting down, but it didn't actually shut down. Radionomy, the Belgian audio platform, bought Winamp as part of a deal for the entire Nullsoft brand. Then Radionomy evolved into the Llama Group, which claims Winamp still has 83 million users worldwide and has also launched a new revamped Winamp player. That's right, it's back. This includes a new fan zone for selling exclusive content and experiences, and listeners now have a new mobile-friendly web player with apps based on the classic version due later this year. It also offers the web app offers podcasts, radio stations, soon the ability to play local files and connect to streaming services. Roger, Patrick, do either of you get a chance to check this out?
I am downloading it as we speak, or trying to.
I think around when it version 3, I fell off the cart because at that point it became a little bloated and ponderous, and there were at least a handful of other players that were a little less bulky, like VLC, that I migrated to.
Yeah, I signed up for the web version of this. You have to like create an account or something like that, and it is. I don't know why they announced it like this, because it feels like a complete like ghost area. Like there are like four bands, like when you click on like indie or like hip hop or electro or anything like that, there's like four bands that you've never heard of. Now it's interesting. I can see what they're doing here. Like, because when you click on some artists, it's like, hey, you can pay a dollar and get access to exclusive stuff. Like, it's almost like a Patreon for, you know, a kind of experience or something like that. But the UI of the web app looks nothing like the classic Winamp that would get all the nostalgia feels for the millennials out there. So I kind of don't know what the play is here. I will definitely check out their mobile apps whenever they come out. If it looks just like old Winamp, I'm going to at least try it out for like 5 minutes. But that is such a nostalgic for like 90s computing that anytime I see something with Winamp, I'm going to check it out. They got me. I'm not one of the 83 million users. No idea where they're getting that number from.
I'm pretty sure it's probably just leftover boxes that kids installed at the computer lab, and someone has that one Pentium 2 box sitting in the corner running it.
They're just counting all PCs in landfills to get to that number. It is bizarre. The brand of Winamp lives on.
There's no like source of open source or you know, private kind of applications that are trying to give you a better music experience, right? Rune Labs, which is dedicated towards audiophiles. You have to pay for it, which makes people really angry, but they do a phenomenal job of bringing together a tremendous amount of, stuff you can do to your music in terms of how you can handle it or parse it or you stream it around your house. It brings together a really beautiful interface over a bunch of different streaming services. There's Volumio and Rune Player, which is very different from Rune Labs, which are open source projects. This looks like a, if you can actually get your services to run on this, I can get the appeal, but I'm with you. I look at the player.winamp.com website and I feel absolutely none of the love I had for Winamp, Rich.
Listen, we eventually got a Duke Nukem game. Maybe we'll get an actual authentic feeling Winamp for all of the 90s feels.
There is a downloadable Windows player for Winamp, but I'm a little afraid to install it looking at this interface because the tears will come. Because I remember my little pencil hand-drawn cover.
It would need to get that. It
Roger
would need
with
to
his anime superhero.
It would need to show up in something like Stranger Things where they just like jump ahead into the 90s and one of the kids is like in a college dorm room with Winamp running.
Hey, man, have you heard about Napster and Winamp?
Listen, as long as it keeps whipping the llamas, but everybody will be happy. And also whipping butt is Patrick Norton. Thank you so much for being on the show today and dropping the knowledge on all things graphical and Windows gaming. Thank you so much. And where can people check out? They want to check out more of yourself. Where are you at?
AVXL.com. There, or just search for AVEXCEL on your favorite podcatcher. It's a weekly podcast I do with Robert Heron about home theater and audio. And if you're at Axpona this weekend, I'll be up there Friday and Saturday and doing a bit of a hangout on Friday night. If you're out there listening to all the speakers and headphones and good stuff at Axpona in Chicago.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. And also give a special thanks to Douglas Thornburg, one of the OGs, one of our top lifetime supporters for Daily Tech News Show. Douglas, thank you so much for all of your years of support, for keeping the show going, for keeping us awesome. We truly, truly appreciate it. Remember, patrons, you can also stick around for our extended show, Good Day Internet. We're going to be talking about more things music adjacent. We're going to be talking about Spotify's new tool to turn radio into more podcasts. Be sure to stick around and check that out. Remember, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. To find out more, just head on over to dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back tomorrow with Jeff from Classic Conversations Podcast talking about how ChatGPT is making his podcast production easier, and we'll have Len Peralta too.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.